doola, metricaboola, bibbidi bobbidi. Put them together, and what have you got? Bibbidi bobbidi boo. Salagadoola, metricaboola, bibbidi bobbidi boo. It'll do magic, believe it or not. Bibbidi bobbidi boo. Now salagadoola means a metricaboola roo. But the thing about that does the job is bibbidi bobbidi boo.
Welcome to Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo. I'm Miss Smith, and joining me to explore her audio boo adventures is Audio Boo's very own Dolores.
Hello, Miss Smith.
So what have you been up to this week?
I went along to the Evening Standards Get Reading campaign at Trafalgar Square, and it was fantastic. Actually, there was quite a few stars there. We had David Harewood.
Okay, we're going to hear from him later.
Yeah, and Niamh Cusack. She was there.
And for those who don't know who Niamh Cusack is, where would people recognise her from?
She's actually in the play at the moment, The Curious Case of the Dog in the Nighttime, up in the West End. But she's a bit of a legend.
Okay, and she was there in Heartbeat, wasn't she?
She was.
People, Google, she was.
Okay.
That's good. So this year we're going to focus on the Evening Standards Get Reading campaign. With the summer holidays and long bammy evenings now upon us, there's no better time to get reading. The campaign is backed by the Mayor of London, Nook, the e-book reader company. Other e-book readers are available. And Beanstalk, which is a reading charity for children. We'll be listening to some of Dolores' boos in a moment, but first let me introduce our guest for today's show, which is first-time, soon-to-be-published author Freya Winter.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So you're going to be a first-time author, and you're going to be published soon. So what's your book called?
My book's called Proximity.
And why is it called Proximity?
It's about closeness. Basically, the title's really important part of the book because it relates back to everything in the book. So everything relates back to closeness. Whether that's closeness like in crowds, people walking along the street, or that's closeness within friendships, relationships, closeness is always related back to the book. So we look at people's outside perception of like crowds, and then we look at people's like relationships with their friends and relationships with like partners. It's quite interesting.
Fantastic. Who's the audience for the book? Is it an adult audience? Is it young adults?
I would say it's probably an adult book, yeah. Looking at, like, I mean, anyone from their 20s, like, upwards. Really,
yeah, we're not talking that kind of adult book.
Yeah, no.
No, we are not.
there's certain scenes in the book, I'm not going to lie, but no, it's not. It's nothing like
okay,
that.
Okay, and when is it going to be published?
January 2014 is the date at the moment.
So not really that long away.
No, it's really soon, and it's not edited down yet either.
Oh,
so
fantastic. Well, we'll be talking about that in more detail, and you'll be joining in some of the conversations. And you'll be reading an extract from the book Proximity a little later. But let's get back to the festival. The festival took place in Trafalgar Square on the 13th of July 2013. And Dolores, you spoke to loads and loads of people, and you also spoke to the Children's Laureate.
Mallory Blackman. Yes, she's not a black man, she's a black woman. She's the first black poet laureate. So, which is quite inspirational. And I was asking her a little bit about, you know, does she use her role to help inspire other ethnic groups or black children? And she said she hopes so.
Okay, let's hear what she had to say.
How does it feel to be the first black woman laureate?
Well, you know, it's wonderful. I mean, it's just I'm the eighth one, and it was started in 1999 by an idea between Michael McPurgo and Ted Hughes. So I'm thrilled that, you know, that I got the chance to kind of try and make the role my own.
I know this sounds a little bit, you know, cliche, but do you think it could be a role model to young black children or ethnic children?
Well, I hope that, I mean, I always hesitate to call myself any kind of role model, but what I do hope is that it will, children will look at me, black, white, Asian, whatever, and say, well, God, if she can do it, I can do it. And I hope it will encourage more black and minority ethnic children to think about publishing and writing as a career.
So congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
It was interesting you spoke to the Children's Laureate, because one of the figures that have come out and the reason why this festival took place is that 1 in 4 11-year-olds are either unable to read or have low literacy levels in the UK. Was that something that people talked about a lot at the festival? Was that kind of common thing?
Absolutely. Because there was a lot of authors there as well. I spoke to Marianne Levy, and she was talking, you know, I asked her how hard it is to write a book, and she did say it took a lot of long time, but you know, off the record as well, she was really concerned about children's, about the literacy rates in this country. And badly, you know, I actually know some children, Sheila, that can't read. I can't believe it. It always shocks me when I know a child can't read.
Freya, you grew up in Orkney, so obviously there was a smaller population there, so were the teachers able to make sure people could read by the age of 11?
You know what, I think a lot of the thing to do with people not reading so much is not a case of them not being able to, it's that they don't do it very often, so they're not fluent at reading, because things like the internet have come about. Even though you're reading on the internet, people are more like, there's other ways of like watching things on YouTube, watching things on TV, gaming, like everything's, I mean, children back like when I was going to school, it's not that long ago, but like, people were more inclined to read. But I still think there's kind of a thing with books that are sort of considered uncool amongst young peers, especially at the age of 11, where they're all trying to be like, I don't know, there's something, whereas when you get older, reading's considered, you know, it's more interesting.
Yeah, and it gets cooler, isn't it?
People admire you when you read a lot, whereas when you're a kid, it's sort of like, oh, why is he reading a book and not playing the PlayStation?
So do you think things like tablets and stuff, it's like your phone, it's quite private.
I think,
do you think that will boost?
I think there became a fashion thing with tablets as well, because you see pictures of people on their bikes holding their tablet under their arm or on the tube holding a tablet, and I think that makes people read sort of a lot more as well. But I personally prefer books, because I think there's something a lot more personal about reading a book, turning the pages. I don't know.
Yeah, and having something physical
it's not the same, really.
Not really like looked into, you know, what could happen if you can't read, but I wonder if it does lead to trouble, you know, kids getting into trouble because they can't read.
Yeah, but in prisons there's a very low literacy rate in prisons.
Yes.
Yeah, and there's lots of different projects in there that I don't know whether it's still running, but there used to be one called Toe to Toe, where prisoners would help fellow prisoners to read. And stuff like that. So some really good work going in there towards.
Because I know there's this sort of like revelation. I read about one guy who learnt to read, you know, like as an adult, and he explained it. It's like it was magic. This other world opened up to it for him. Like before, he'd always hated reading, and then suddenly he could read, and it's like, oh, this is what it's all about.
So did you read a lot as a child yourself? Or was it something you came to later?
No, I read a lot as a child. Yeah, I used to go to the library and get all the Just William books. Like all of them at once, because you know, you get 13 books.
13 books?
13 at one go.
I do 13 books.
Oh, I did. I used to get them and then sit behind the sofa and read them all.
But what would you have done with that library, though?
My childhood would have been terrible, because my parents weren't the best parents in the world, and I had no one to turn to, because we don't have a big family. Yeah. So without those books, I don't know. I can't imagine what it would have been
was
like.
Was it definitely a role to escape into?
Absolutely, Miss Smith.
Free, what about you in libraries?
Yeah, I mean, I've grown up with a mum who has a bookshop, so I was always sort of made to read from a really young age, and my auntie's a writer, so I grew up with books, like, it was second nature. We didn't have a computer till I was 11, so I don't read as much as my mum. My mum was just constantly reading all the time, but I'm very much a person, if I pick up a book and I don't like it, I won't continue with it. But if I like it after sort of 2-3 pages, I'm like, there's specific books that I love and I will read. So, I mean, I've always read a lot since I was really young.
And particularly with local authorities, with their cuts, I mean, another interesting fact is that the UK have lost more than 200 branches of libraries. So lots of libraries closing all over the place.
It's not just about reading in the library, is it? There is that community thing as well.
Yeah, which is very important.
Very important.
And just getting information out to the communities,
you know,
and stuff.
Lewisham's got a high, you know, one of the largest young populations. Mm. So we need them.
And you've got a boo, which we're going to play. You spoke to Darren Taylor, who opened and ran 4 libraries. What area was that in?
In the Lewisham. Actually, he was one of the first men in the country to say, look, I can save these libraries and turn them around and make money. Because it was like, how are you going to make money to keep them? Of course, he's got a computer recycling centre, so he uses that for... It's non-profit, but... They seem to be doing quite well.
Excellent, fantastic. So let's hear your boo.
Now, I know you do a lot in your libraries. You have an old senior group.
We've got the senior group. We're going on the 8th of December. We're going on dinner, medieval dinner.
What about your IT training for seniors?
IT training is going on in Sydenham Library and Pepys Library. And in those two libraries, it happens in all the libraries, but in those two libraries, they get a free computer as well if they're over 55.
Right.
Yeah.
And what else have we got going on? What else have you got going in your libraries? It's not just those two.
We, in Crofton Library, we've got a baby bounce on Friday mornings, 10 o'clock till 10:30. And I've seen the figures, and they have 90 people turning up. The prams take over the adult library. You can't get a book out.
90 a week? In the week?
Yeah, in the week. Yeah, just on the Friday morning.
90?
Yeah, just in one...
So they've actually taken the library over?
They've taken the library over, the baby bounce, sing-along.
But that's fantastic.
It is fantastic, and that's what the library's about. It's about people using it, and...
did they have a baby bounce in Lewisham House?
They did, but so it wasn't... It was there, but it wasn't as many as that. But what we've got is we've allowed a local... a person who's got their own children's activity project in Broccoli... to come in and deliver that on a voluntary basis. And what we do in exchange is we promote her services. So it means it doesn't cost us anything to run it, and it's really professional.
Back to the festival at Trafalgar Square, and you spoke to lots of people. There was lots of famous places there. Hugh Grant was there. Did you get Hugh Grant?
I didn't. I've spoken to him before, but I couldn't be bothered to wait.
Barbara Windsor was there. Did you get Barbara Windsor?
No, she didn't want to talk. She disappeared out the side entrance.
She didn't want to talk?
No, she disappeared. She wouldn't talk to the press.
Did you get Peppa Pig?
I did, but we're not allowed to actually record her voice because she's a brand.
And who else? Dick and Dawn?
Oh, no, they wouldn't talk to us.
Well, that's not much good. It's just as well, these people coming up next dead.
Russell, do you like horror and sci-fi and all the rest of it?
Big time. Yeah. Most of my career has been horror and sci-fi related so far. Yeah.
What's your favourite horror book?
Do you remember Point Horror?
Yes.
Which were the kids' books, which I loved because they were like quite disturbing, some of them, as a kid.
It might have been actually.
And there was a lot of them, and I remember as a kid they were like, but now horror books. I mean, I don't really read horror for pleasure, I suppose. I go and see a horror movie, but I'm into massive autobiographies. I love like people telling their own stories.
David, hi there. Now that you're a major Hollywood star, and we've all watched Homeland and we love it and we await the next episode, has it interrupted your love of reading?
No, in fact, you have a lot of time when you're a lot of people think that, you know, we're all kind of living these glamorous Hollywood lives, but it's not going to be further from the truth. I mean, it's a lot of hard work when you do these TV shows, and there's a lot of hanging around, a lot of waiting around, and it's the perfect thing to do is pick up a book and read, because as I say, with especially with television, there's just a lot of waiting around. So favorite book, I've got lots of favorite books. Can't think of one at the moment, but as I said on stage, I loved reading His Dark Materials. I just think it's a kid's book, but it's the subject matter is just fantastic, and I love things that take me out of the ordinary.
I have spent many a late night up with you, scared out of my wits. What do you say about that?
Have you been listening to The Seventh Dimension or
I
something?
Have.
Yeah,
absolutely excellent. What got you started? What was the book that got you started reading?
Oh, well, that's an interesting one, actually, because I was a really difficult child with reading. My mother got quite... she didn't know what to do because I just wasn't reading. I was quite interested in writing, so somehow I'd assimilated the whole reading thing. But she eventually took some advice from the school, and they said, get him something that he's really interested in. So it was a dinosaur book. It's a great big book with loads of pictures of dinosaurs and lots of information and all the strange names, you know, Diplodocus and all that. And, Diplodocus, as we say now. So that's what got me into it, really. As for storybooks, Brer Rabbit, Jennings and Derbyshire, which were, you know, the sort of very upper class school stories. Nothing to do with me. I was a state school. But yeah, stuff like that, really.
So you've obviously kept the passion, and that's why you've come along to the Get Reading Festival today.
Yes, I have. I mean, the reason I keep a passion about reading is that it's the only way we have access to all the stories from the past, you know? And we are the sum of our stories. All of us every day tell stories. You never guess what happened to me today, that kind of thing. You know, even if it's about the train being late. And that's why I think reading is massively important, not just for history, but also going forward. Because, writing stuff is the way you plan everything. And it's the way you can tell people more and more. You know, all the stuff people love, computer games, movies, television, they all start with the words.
So where's your love of books come from?
Oh, I've always loved books ever since I was absolutely tiny. I love the fact that you can be in your bedroom and yet you can go into a whole other world. You can meet people you would never normally meet, and all without ever leaving your bed. It's the wonderfulest thing in the world. I love books so much.
I think a true reader could never lie about why they love reading, because it is all in your head. It's
all in your head.
So, but is it hard to write a book?
It's very hard to write a book, but in a way, we're very lucky because you've got everything you need to start writing. Just so long as you can have a pen in front of you and a piece of paper, you've got everything you need to begin. But of course, the difference between beginning and finishing it took me 7 years to write the first Ellie Mae book, so a long, long time. But that's because writing very well is very difficult. But you can practice.
Do you find that practice makes perfect?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I really subscribe to the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours thing. So it's over my 7 years practicing writing was my 10,000 hours, and finally. But it gets harder. The more you write, the harder it gets. Yeah. Hopefully, the better it gets as well.
No, you're not running out of ideas. Have you got loads in your head?
Loads and loads and loads of ideas. But it's very hard finding the idea that you think will make a book. You want to take your ideas by the shoulders and look into their faces and go, "Is it you? Are you going to be my next book, or is it you? Or is it you?" And then you sort of write and you try and you experiment. Then after a bit, some of the ideas shrink and shrink and shrink and get smaller, and other ideas get bigger and more complicated and longer. And you think, "Ah, I'm being drawn into a world, and I'm finding out new things that I never even knew about this character." And that's when you think, "Ah, yes, maybe this is going to start turning into a book."
It was very interesting. I deliberately put Marianne Levy last because of what she had to say about escaping into a book, which kind of goes on to what we had on there earlier. What did you think about what she had to say?
She was fantastic. I think all of us that read want to be writers, but we can't all be. I can't. I'm rubbish. You know, I love reading and I love audio. But she did say that her first book actually took her 7 years to write.
And that was our first book, 7 years.
7 years it took her to write the Ellie Mae books.
And Freya, it took you 3 years to write your first book?
3 years, yeah. I started when I was 18, and then I just finished it this year. So I'm 21 now.
So 21, that's quite young to be an author.
Yeah, it is. I never thought I'd be getting the okay to be published at this age, I have to admit. I've always wanted to write a book, but I never thought it was going to get published.
So what inspired you to first start writing?
Well, I guess my auntie's a writer. She's a published author already. She's quite big in Scotland. But I think it was I dropped out.
Shall we give your auntie a plug? Let's plug our books.
Yeah.
What's your auntie's name?
Alison Flett.
Name some books.
She's done a lot of short stories within books, but her book, Gwit Lassie Yuinte, is called. So she writes in Scots, pure Scots.
She writes in Scottish language.
She doesn't only write in Scots, but she writes a lot of books in Scots, yeah, like old Scots.
What made you decide to write? Obviously, you've got writing in your family, but what made you actually go, "I'm going to start a book today"?
You know, I can't really remember. I remember having the idea when I was walking my dogs, but when I started writing, I was kind of down at the time. I just dropped out of school and I was just about to turn 18, actually. And I was really nocturnal. I used to stay up basically all night, go to bed at like six in the morning, and then just not wake up till six the next evening. So I wasn't even getting daylight because it was winter as well. I was in Scotland, so it was quite a depressing time, I guess. But I used to stay up and write like all night, so in a sense those hours weren't wasted away doing nothing, and I came up with all the characters in that time. And well, actually some of the characters.
So tell us more about your characters in your books. It's set around the world as well, even though the title's Proximity.
Yeah, well that's the thing, because the characters live in different parts. Well, there's some living in London, some living in New York, but they're all connected to one another, and that's where the proximity comes into it. The first character I started off with was a character called Luol, and he is quite crazy. He was diagnosed with bipolar as a child. Mm. His family are very kind of quite wealthy, and they've always forced him through like medication to get help. And he's just grown up knowing that he's got this problem. He's obviously been forced through counselling and stuff, but he's just always, he's a writer as well in the book, and he's just always thought like, there's nothing wrong with me, I just see things a different way, and I see things like, I see people in a different way. And the extract I'll read today is from Luol's point of view.
The character's also in Paris as well, because you actually lived in Paris for a while.
I moved to Paris when I was 18, on my own, which was quite scary. And Anna, who is the writer, is the actual published writer within the book, her character is a published writer, she's French, and she's the one that was in Paris, although she moves to London in the book. So
parts of your life are mirrored in your characters.
Definitely, I've definitely based a lot of traits and stuff in my characters within traits that I've had in myself and traits that have changed within myself as I was sort of growing up, I guess.
And there's the dog's a character.
There's a
the
dog
book.
Called Vanita. She is Diana's dog, and we see a little bit from her point of view. She's a Saluki, so we've got like some of her thoughts in the book as well, which is quite interesting.
So that's good. Was that a hook for trying to get it published?
The dog. Yeah. Thing? Not really. You know, I didn't. There's not much of Vanita's thoughts, but it's interesting because it's like it starts off with like she's looking up at her owner waiting to be taken out, and her owner's just sitting on the sofa like really taking her time, and she's wondering when she's going to go out. But there's a line in the book which is a dog has many questions never asked and never answered, because obviously a dog would think a lot of things, but obviously he can't talk, so he never gets back. But Diana's very secluded. She's lost her baby and her husband, her daughter and her husband, but it starts off, look at her flashback of how they died, and so she's very, very close with her dog. Her dog's like her close companion. So
trying to get it published, how did you go about that?
You know what, I never was going to get it published at all. I was going to finish it and I was going to see what it was like when it was finished. My mum's bookshop is connected to our publishing house, and they asked if they could read it. And they were like, this material is really good, you should send it to publishing houses, and if no one's going to accept it, we want to publish it for you.
When it is published, how can people get it? Can they order it through the normal...
Yeah, I would say just be able to search it on Amazon, probably. My mum will be really against that because she works in a bookshop and Amazon are taking over her bookshop. just search it, Google it.
Oh, you can ask your local bookshop to order it for you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And also on YouTube, there's a link. If you type in my name, which is Freya Winter, and then proximity, there's a link to the opening of it.
Interesting. I've thought about it. So let's hear an extract from the book. So this isn't the one that's available on YouTube, is it?
No, it's
a different one.
It's a different one.
Okay.
This is called Crowds. He watched as the people moved in swarms, but nobody seemed genuinely happy. Everyone was reacting off one another, but they were faking their existence. So many had the same empty feeling. Where were their lives going? Where were their relationships and friendships going? It was easy to swim among them. Meaningless sex, beautiful sculptures, versions of real people without being anyone significant. No dedication. Wasn't that better, easier? The mannequins walked as if nothing could touch their beauty, but so much could and did. Their half-lives were only fulfilling them from the outside. To those that were jealous and deluded, and even to them, it was transparent. They were clones of one another. Game was the main objective. What after game? Of course, compete. Compete with anyone who got too near, too close to who they were aiming to be. Luol tried to see past it, past their empty words and glancing beauty. He tried to find human. He found it impossible. He saw only faces, expressionless. How were they part of any of it? There was no magic to unlock. It was reality. Pristine people. Dolls taking over the world. Industries, companies, careers, success, money, fame. He was looking through binoculars, but seeing through a kaleidoscope, fighting this burning desire. He was in denial, for he wanted to be accepted by them too.
I love that.
You're only 21.
Yeah, he just turned 21.
Yeah, and you've got such a talent there.
Hopefully.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Really good.
Hopefully, you might be at some point, maybe not now, but in the future, be on the top 10 children's list, which I just thought would be nice to kind of end the show with. You know, because hopefully that will be with you going. This list is taken from over 2,000 schools who took part on voting on this for the best children's books in 2013. And this was taken in February. which I was like, well, we're only like a month into 2013.
Is J.K. Rowling in this list?
She is. She's in there twice.
I forgot to say about that. I met her. She came to visit me in hospital, so that's probably...
J.K. came to visit you in hospital. Was she pretending to be Robert Galbraith at the time?
No, she wasn't. She was herself. She came with her bodyguard and PA at a special
team. J.K.'s got a bodyguard!
Yeah.
So is she an inspiration to you?
I would say very much an inspiration. Not so much because of Harry Potter, but because of what she was speaking to me about the day she came to visit me. She's just so real. Like, she's an author, but she's... You can tell. Because obviously she's very successful, but she walked out of a completely normal... Well, quite hard life, really.
Yeah.
Do you like the Harry Potter books?
I love the Harry Potter books.
Yeah, I do.
We'll get to them in just a second. So, Dolores, what's number one on the top 10 list of children's books?
The Glass Houses by Rachel Caine.
And that's a vampire-themed book. She's got two entries in this top 10.
Okay.
All seem to be vampire-y.
Well, that's the trend at the moment,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, in terms of young adult books. Number two is Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
The best ones of all the ones she's written, I think, The Prisoner of Azkaban.
Why do you say that?
I think in that book, all the characters they suddenly became much closer, much more linked together. Obviously, they were suddenly sort of getting older, so their closeness was becoming more of a thing for them. So
yeah, okay. And number three is Twilight.
Rubbish.
It is.
Sorry.
Okay, that's unanimous. Sorry, Stephanie Meyer, but we apparently not big hit here. And again, there's something there for the boys. So Alex Rider, Crocodile Tears by Anthony Horowitz is in at number four. At number five, it's The Dead Girls Dance, again from Rachel Caine. Again, more vampires. What's in at number six, Dolores?
Diary of a Wimpy Kid, The Ugly Truth.
Which
are Jeff Kinney.
Popular films.
I've heard that those books are really good. They're big sellers in my mum's bookshop, Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Yeah, and the films are good as well.
I've got to say, I've not seen them or read them. Oh. I do like children's books. I'll probably grab it and have a little read of that because it does look interesting.
Yeah, because this is one of the kind of points that, although they're not young children's books, these are more kind of young adult books and stuff, but they're very accessible to adults. In at number seven is Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, which is my favourite one. I think that was the first one I read, really, cover to cover. And I got Stephen Fry narrating it as well, which is always good.
In your house.
Yes, he popped round.
Come in, Stephen.
He's very flexible, if you ask him the right way. No, it was the audio books. In at number eight, we have Mates, Dates and Soul Survivors by Kathy Hopkins. And in at number nine, we've got, squarely aimed at the boys, although probably not totally, is Survival from Chris Ryan, because his books are very, very popular amongst the boys.
Are they?
They are.
I always find that boys' books when I was younger were more interesting and more adventurous.
Well, yeah, although that may be their target audience, that doesn't mean you're not going to get, you know, the odd boys reading stuff that's maybe aimed at girls, at vampire books, and vice versa, so it's kind of spy novels, especially the young James Bond.
I used to love
Anthony
Horowitz when I was younger.
Yeah. And then finally, in at number 10 is Percy Jackson and the Battle of the Labyrinth. So, just a reminder that your book will be out in the new year.
Yeah.
It's called Proximity by Freya Winter.
Yeah.
So, look out for that, everybody. We'll be back at some point with another Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo, depending on what Dolores is up to. Now, you're off to Latitude Festival.
So jealous.
And I'm off to Glasgow.
Yes.
But we plan, hopefully, to reunite in Edinburgh.
At the Edinburgh Festival.
To do some stuff at the Fringe.
Yes.
Sitting somewhere, hopefully.
Can't wait.
Hopefully in sunshine. It may be in rain. It is Scotland, after all. But we'll be back. But we're going to leave you with... because we think reading and books are part of the necessities in life. So from the Jungle Book, here is Bear Necessities.
Look for the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries and your strife. I mean the bare necessities are Mother Nature's recipes that bring the bare necessities of life. Wherever I wander, wherever I roam, I couldn't be found off my big home. The bees are buzzing in the tree to make some honey just for me.
When you look under the rocks and plants and take a glance at the fancy ants, then maybe try a few. The bare necessities of life will come to you. They'll come to you. Look for the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries and your strife. I mean the bare necessities. That's why a bear can rest at ease with just the bare necessities of life. Now when you pick a pawpaw or a prickly pear, and you prick a raw paw, well, next time.